Ready to stop trading time for money and build a business that can scale? Then you're in good company. This is the Productize Podcast, where I chat with entrepreneurs who've transformed their businesses using the Productize service model. I'm your host, Brian Castle. Want to learn my best strategies for productizing your business? Then get my free crash course by going to productizecourse.com. Now let's get into the show.
All right, so if you're a WordPress developer, or even if you're not, you'll find tons of insightful nuggets from this Productize student case study with Jason Resnick. That's what you're going to hear today. And it was a really interesting conversation. And one really interesting point that popped out to me was when Jason told me that he had set himself a goal of 10xing his revenue within his first year, which is, you know, that's a pretty larger than life kind of goal to set for yourself. But he actually hit that milestone within 6 months of productizing his service. I thought that was just, you know, crazy impressive. So you're going to hear all about that. And in this case study, you're going to learn how Jason shaved hours off of his production time with just a few simple tools and systems. You're also going to hear how he manages to deliver quote unquote unlimited support without hiring a large support team. Also, why Jason chose a productized service instead of selling WordPress plugins and themes, which are, you know, very popular product types within the WordPress space. He chose not to go that route, and instead he did a productized service, and you'll hear his reasons for that. And then finally, how he introduced his new higher priced packages to his longtime clients and why they still bought into it. So we'll get into that conversation in just a moment. Now, today's quick tip is to focus on one ideal customer. And we hear this all the time, but I can't stress how important this tip is, really, no matter what type of business you're in. But this is especially the case when you're building a productized service business. By focusing on one ideal customer, that's what kind of unlocks the whole box and the whole toolbox of marketing campaigns and marketing strategies that you can use to actively and proactively get your business and your value proposition, your offer, in front of your ideal customer. Because when you have not defined who your most ideal customer is, then you can't really do any of that kind of proactive marketing stuff because you don't know who you're going after. You don't know the places where you need to be. You don't know the networks that you need to kind of penetrate, if you will. So, you know, by understanding who your most ideal customer is, you can really get a deep understanding of, you know, who they are, what they do, where they're coming from, what their goals are, what their top challenges are, and what their most burning problems are. And that's what's going to actually lead you to a solution, a value proposition that essentially sells itself, because you're connecting with a very specific type of customer who has a very specific problem, and they found you in among thousands of other companies out there. They found you and you've planted your flag saying, I solved this problem for this customer. And that's what makes selling a productized service so much easier than, say, general consulting type of work. So that's today's tip. Focus on one ideal customer. Now let's get into it. All right. I'm here with another case study interview. Today I'm talking to Jason Resnick. Jason, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me, Brian.
Cool. So you and I talked, I guess it was about a year ago or so, when we first met, and we talked about your WordPress development services and how you're making this transition to productizing. So I guess, you know, but before we get into your backstory, let's talk about where things stand today. So your website is, I love your domain, rezzz.com, which is rezzz.com. And anyone can kind of check that out. And that's, you know, clearly you do WordPress web development services. But I mean, in a nutshell, how do you describe your business today?
I provide monthly development resources for your WordPress site for small businesses, designers, and marketing firms, specializing in e-commerce and custom development.
Very cool. And, you know, one thing that immediately stands out to me that you and I have talked a lot about is that you don't exactly bill by the hour, and but you also don't necessarily charge per project either, which is kind of the more traditional thing. I mean, that's really what I used to do when I did WordPress web development. was like, figure out what you need and let's do a proposal. And every project is completely different. But you have these packages where you're selling, for the most part, monthly retainer packages for your services, right?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. I mean, I used to do the hourly thing. I still do sometimes. And I used to do the project-based, you know, contracts as well. Those are few and far between at this point. But yeah, I've turned them over to really just the monthly service price, and they pay month over month for whatever they need done.
Yeah, very cool. And you and I were talking before this call, and you know, as we start to step back to a year or so ago and get into your story a little bit, it was interesting to hear you talk about, well, you know, if you work as a freelance WordPress developer and you're thinking about transitioning into products, or you just want to build something that's a little bit more sustainable and reliable and predictable, the very first place that people go is selling plugins or selling WordPress themes, you know, because that's kind of what gets all the attention. I mean, can you talk a little bit about that?
Like most freelancers, I want to have a sustainable business. And being in the WordPress space, a lot of people latch on to that as selling a product of some sort, whether that's a theme or a plugin or some sort of ebook or something like that, where, you know, month over month or day over day, they can generate revenue in that way. Because I didn't want to go down that route, I tried to figure out what I can do to really tailor my services in more of a productized way, because I enjoyed doing the custom work day after day. Really just being able to listen to a client's goals and objectives and be able to implement those, you know, and see them through, you know, not just development and launch, but through implementation and support, you know, and be able to pivot with them, whatever they needed. So for me, that's what I enjoyed doing. And I wanted to try to figure out how I could productize that. And not have to rely on, you know, the traditional, let me build a plugin or a theme and then build a support team around that and a marketing team around that and try to get sales that way.
Yeah. Well, what was that, what it was? Like the daunting idea of building a support team or having to support a plugin, was that kind of what turned you away from that model at first?
In part, yeah. I mean, you know, to build, I knew that support was going to be a big deal. And, you know, I had spoken to a lot of people that had their own plugins and they were doing their own thing in that way. And they said, it's not as much as you would think and all that. So that kind of diffused that a little bit. But then I really was like, is that something that I'm going to enjoy doing? You know, building a plugin and kind of tailoring the features and iterating over that software. And I wasn't sure that it would keep my interest, so to speak.
Yeah, it's true. That's a side of building a software product that most people, selling a software product is so exciting, and there's an allure to it, right? But I've definitely experienced this where, you know, you build version one, and by the time it's ready for like a second version or changing or something or some kind of enhancement, you're just sick of looking at the same screen over and over again, you know, and the same kind of feature set.
Yeah, and that's what it is with what I provide to my clients, is that, you know, they're all different in their own way. You know, I don't have two clients in the same space, but, you know, they all do e-commerce, or they all do, you know, email list building, some sort of content marketing. You know, they have custom development on their site in some way that, you know, they need fit for their business.
Yeah.
And that to me is interesting, because, you know, if I get stagnant, it's something that I'm just not going to want to wake up in the morning and do.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, this is interesting because I know that a lot of other people, especially in the web development space, but other industries too, kind of fall into this where, you know, they're looking at a productized service as a potential path forward, but they're kind of, you know, backing away because it's, too repetitive or it looks like it's just doing one thing over and over and over, but you managed to craft your model around doing what like something that you valued most, which was having that variety and working with different clients and solving different problems. But how did you craft it into a standard predictable model? Like what are your pricing and packages of service actually look like today?
Yeah, I mean, just before today, I kind of did go down that route of WordPress maintenance packages. But what I did was I tacked on like development hours to them. So I did the standard, you know, back up your site and updates and all that kind of thing. But then I always wanted to still solve those problems that were custom to each client. So I would tack on 5 or 10 or 15, 20 hours a month to those packages, and they would purchase that way. But then I was still too tied to that metric of hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of wanted to move away from that because I felt that the value add was more than just how much is my hourly rate. You know, my experiences, what I look at on a daily basis, you know, things that I've learned over the years. So last year was a transition period for me. You know, from 2014 into 2015, that's when I was like, okay, you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to really go full 100% in on this and see if it works. I'm going to give it a good year to see if I can really make this work in some way and see if I can, you know, basically sell my services as a product.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was, over the years, one of the big things that I found in development is that business people, they don't necessarily want to know what the techno mumbo jumbo is. They just really want the whatever their end goal is, that's what they want. They might want to know a little bit about what's going on to get there, but they really don't care if you're saving, you know, backing up their site offsite and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So I started changing the language of how I speak to these clients. More to speak to the benefits rather than the features. And that mindset was a game changer because I was kind of speaking their language rather than speaking my language and speaking, you know, with them rather than to them. So that way it was able to really say, okay, this is my service. This is the benefits that I can provide to you as a developer, you know, on your behalf, month over month, you know, sitting with you, communicating with you on a regular basis. And this is where we're going to go. You know, if we don't get there, there's going to be, along the way, you're going to know why or how, or we can transition or whatever it is. And that's kind of where I came up with the slogan for your partner in code, is because I'm there every step of the way with them to achieve those goals.
Very cool. And so that big change, you mentioned that you went into the year saying, I'm going to give this thing a year and see what happens, and see if you can kind of transition your business model. And basically the main change that you were looking at was going to this fixed monthly price, and you get a list of things that are included, which are like a weekly phone call. Basically, is it as unlimited like code changes, or like how does that work?
Right. So what I do offer is, you know, I say unlimited. Obviously, it's just me, so there's only so many hours in a day. But the thing is, communication is key in my service, in that, you know, we sit down every week, we kind of outline the priorities of what you're trying to achieve, you know, for the upcoming week or for the quarter or whatever the goal, you know, whatever you're trying to accomplish. And I say, okay, it's going to take about this long, you know,
right.
and I kind of tell them, you know, I set the expectations, and that's really all that the clients really ever care about.
Yeah, and so it's really just like about, it's not constant, you know, continuously re-quoting or re-estimating how many billable hours. It's just like they have you on retainer, and that's that. Like you're just continuously making progress toward, you know, incremental improvements.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. I wanted to create kind of like a frictionless environment for businesses because, you know, there's always that, like, if you take it out of a month, and this is when I you know, early on a couple of years back when I started really tracking the time of what I was spending it on, it was anywhere between like a week and 2 weeks of just scoping projects out, you know, and out of the month. And you know, that takes time and it grinds on people and going back and forth with the emails and all that other stuff. I just wanted to create some sort of service where, you know, here's what you're getting when you pay me for the month. And that's basically what happens is I'm not locking anybody into a contract. I basically just say you pay me for the month that's coming up and we'll work together. If you don't want to, then, you know, if you can tell me at least five days before so I could take you out of the billing so you don't get all the updates and things like that. But, you know, I just bill forward instead of launching something and then having to invoice after the fact.
Yeah. So I do want to get into, like, step back into, like, the first steps and how you started to make this transition. But before we get there, I mean, you brought up billing. I'm curious. I'm sure the listeners are curious. Like, how does your billing work? When do you bill clients? How do they pay?
I basically have two tiers, and the tiers basically are the exact same package. The difference is the higher tiers basically get you availability to me in communication, meaning every week we're going to have a scheduled scrum call. That's your time slot. You know, I usually do it on Thursdays or Fridays, and I schedule it so that this way every week we know we get on the phone at 3 o'clock and we talk for about a half an hour about what we did the last week and what we want to do the upcoming week or shift priorities around. Mm-hmm. I also provide them a Slack channel. I use Slack for, you know, kind of instant communication, you know, because sometimes some people, they love email, and that's really the core of my business is through email. But some people enjoy, you know, Slack. They like the fact that they can just kind of write to me at any time that they're thinking about, and I'll pop on in the morning, or even if it's, you know, something on my phone pops up during the day, at least I have immediate access to them. And it kind of gives them that comfort level that they know that at least I'm around. Instead of having an in-house developer, they know that they can just pull up Slack and be able to, you know, grab a hold of me at any given time. And that's really the difference between the two tiers. The upper tier is at this point right now $24.99, and that gets you all of that information.
Got it. And you're billing at the start of the month, or
yes,
after?
Yeah.
Okay. And is it all like do you use like Stripe, or are you sending like an invoice and they pay?
I use Freshdesk for the invoicing, and it's linked into Stripe.
So. Very cool. Awesome. So, okay. So
FreshBooks.
Oh, FreshBooks. Yeah. Of course.
Freshdesk is my, help desk system actually.
Oh, cool. Oh, so you're using a help desk system too.
Yeah.
Like, I was going to say, like, having all these Slack, you know, communication and email communication and, you know, it sounds like you do need to have a system to organize all of it.
Yeah. I mean, I've done all sorts of Zapier integrations and everything to kind of seamlessly put everything into Freshdesk so it gets tracked. So even Slack messages that somebody just pings me, oh, I need to do this on the site, I wind up just, you know, running a slash command in Slack, and that actually creates a help desk ticket for me. So that this way everything is tracked, nothing gets fall through the cracks.
Got it.
That for me, I think a lot of times that's what developers, they don't have these systems in place.
Yeah.
And if they do, it's very, you know, for the client itself, themselves, that's not a part of their everyday. They're not going to go in and use like Jira or any of these complex systems, and they don't want to, you know. I try to make it as easy as possible for them to interact with me and be able to, you know, get what they need done.
Yeah, I've had the same approach. I mean, we use Help Scout, which I'm sure is pretty similar to Freshdesk, and so they just have our one email address, and they don't have to log into any sort of, you know, back-end help desk system or anything like that. Like, we just receive their email, and on our end, we've got our whole sophisticated ticketing organization and all that, but they don't see any of that. They just see a regular email.
Exactly.
Cool. And you know, I guess the other thing to point out here is, you know, is we're hearing you say, you know, every client gets their own Slack channel, or at least the ones paying the upper tier get that. You know, you have the weekly calls. They're sending these emails in. I guess to a certain extent, it's like you are available to them to respond and do work, but it's not necessarily like immediate on call. Like if they sent a Slack message to you, there's no guarantee that you're going to get back to them within 10 minutes, right? Like they still have these access points and their messages get into your ticketing system, but I'm sure you can, you know, spend a few hours working on something and then come back and you know, fill out it, like, you know, battle through the tickets every morning or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for me, the onboarding and the setting the expectation is critical with them, with new clients, and making sure that they know, you know, I do have office hours. You know, I might be, you know, I might not have like, you know, a Fifth Avenue address, you know, and an 800 number, but, you know, I do hold office hours. They know that I don't take calls on Monday unless I schedule them, that kind of thing. You know, this way that the work gets done. You know, and they're fine. You know, like I've come to realize that as long as clients know what's going on, then they're not going to really say boo about it.
Yeah.
As long as you set those expectations. If they come to me, and they say what's going on with X, you know, that for me is like, oh, what happened? You know, where did the communication break down?
Right.
You know, so I try to keep that first and foremost. And these avenues, you know, again, you know, I have clients all over the globe at this point, and, you know, different time zones and things. And, you know, sometimes I'll wake up in the morning and there'll be a whole laundry list of Slack messages, you know, it just happens to be that way. And, you know, they know that, I'm not going to be answering Slack messages at 3 o'clock in the morning, but, you know, like you said, as long as they're, you know, they know these things, and then I'll circle back with them. I usually tell them I'll circle back with them at least within the next business day.
Very cool. Okay, so let's go back, I don't know, a year ago, maybe 2 years ago. Like, so what were the very first steps that you took when you knew that, you know, you're going towards this productized service concept? What was the very first thing that you did?
Track my time. I had to know exactly for me what I was spending time doing and how much of that I can optimize.
Interesting.
So what I did was, you know, just simple time tracker. I happen to use Toggle, and it's free for one user, I think. And I just, everything I did, either whether it was replying to emails, taking phone calls, coding, you know, even researching reading blog posts for clients, that kind of thing. You know, I was just tracking my time so that I knew where I could optimize things, and be able to shave minutes off of my week.
So what did you find? Like what were the results, or how did you analyze your time?
So what was interesting was that I was finding things like going back and forth with setting up meetings and like I was saying before about the contracts, you know, scoping out projects and things. So those time consuming things, to me, I was like, okay, if I can address those things right off the bat, you know, then that I'm already shaving hours off of my week. You know, so I use Calendly to set up appointments and things like that. That shaves off at least 4 or 5 emails.
Yeah. Oh man, Calendly is such a good tool. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, definitely. And the way that, you know, just other things too that I found that, you know, I had already kind of put this help desk into place, but like as you said, you know, like if people are hitting me through email or they're hitting me up on a phone call or through Slack or something like that, how can I shave the time from cutting and pasting things and dropping it into the email? And so I started using Zapier and IFTTT.com and things like that to try to automate a lot of these things. And now it's funny because so much of that behind the scenes is automated. When one of those services goes down, and it doesn't happen often, but when it does, I'm like, where is everything? What happened?
Right. But, yeah.
It saves tons and tons of time just to know where you can shave off those minutes and then really concentrate on the work at hand.
Yeah. Okay. So there are a lot of tools and systems and behind the scenes automation that a lot of us tech types, you know, techie types know how to work our way around, things like Zapier and all that. So that can shave off, you know, a chunk of time and make things more efficient for you. But I got to think that there were other things that you changed in your service, maybe on the client's side. You know, I think you talked about how you only do your calls on Thursdays and Fridays, and you have no calls on Mondays. And like, what were the changes from the client's perspective that you like the very first things that you put in place?
Well, it was actually probably a couple of things in place, but it was really just making sure that every client was going through the same process, no matter what they were doing. Whatever time zone, whatever their business was. So, like as I said, I do have office hours. I don't take calls on Monday, mainly because I want to make sure that the week starts off that I'm getting work done. If I get calls at 9 a.m. Monday because, you know, three clients thought of things over the weekend, I'm already T-boned for Monday morning. Mm-hmm. And for me, that starts out with an unproductive week. And really knowing myself and where I'm more productive was key also. So I know towards the end of the week, like Friday afternoons, I usually put my low energy tasks there. So by doing that and knowing that, you know, I'll take my scrum calls then, so that this way I could set up my following Monday with the highest priorities based out of those calls that we had, you know, the previous week. And really just communicating with the clients and knowing that, okay, this is the email address that you use. You want to get anything done, you have to go through this method. That's how it's going to get tracked. That's how I know it's going to get done. If you text message me or whatever you might do, I'm not going to answer that. Or mm-hmm. It's going to get lost in the shuffle. You know, it's not going to get done. So really just having a proper onboarding. I mean, you know, that. It's kind of a loose term, but it's really just setting the expectations from the clients, from both what I expect from them, but what they can expect from me as well.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. When did the pricing and packages, that like the changes that you made there, when did those come into play, and how did you introduce those price packages for the first time when you had been doing like hourly billing before that?
Yeah, so that was... like I said, really January of last year is when I implemented these prices, right at the start of the new year.
January 2015.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so we're recording this end of December, so just exactly like a year ago.
Yes, yeah.
Yep.
And so I had kind of around Thanksgiving time of 2014, I kind of started telling my existing clients that I was moving towards this new service and new business, and kind of giving them some sort of opportunity to, you know, stay on board if they wanted to, and really, you know, kind of capitalize on some early bird access things and mm-hmm. and early bird pricing and that kind
of stuff. So you were going to clients who you had been working with already, and they've sure. been paying you for a long time, and you yep. had these contacts already.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I wanted to really base that of having quarterly conversations with those existing clients is how I built the services that I needed, you know, whether they, you know, they wanted more communication, you know, what kind of services they were looking for from a developer, those kind of things. So that's kind of how I shaped my business. And then it was really just me about me just formatting that in a way to present it to them. You know, back to them saying, this is what I'm doing, you know, and this is really out of our conference calls.
So what did that actually look like? Like you sent an email, or you had a call and you said, okay, starting next month, there's going to be, I'm going to start billing you on this model instead of the old model. And like, did they have to like opt into that? And like, what was the feedback or any pushback?
Yeah. I mean, there was some pushback. You know, obviously it was a price increase. You know, and it was a different way of a lot. Some of them were with me for like 5 years, you know, and they were used to the same, you know, the model that I was working in. They were used to the hourly, they were used to that kind of thing. And by me transitioning, you know, maybe their business couldn't adjust to it. Maybe how they worked with their own clients couldn't adjust to it. I mean, I kind of trickled in a couple of them into Q2 of 2015 under the old model, just mm-hmm. because I had an established relationship with them and I didn't want to kind of burn that bridge.
Sure.
But, you know, some people carried on, you know, some people switched immediately because they wanted, you know, the value that I provided to them. They said, yeah, that's fine. You know, you should have charged more still, you know, and I'm like, great.
Right.
But, you know.
But don't.
But, right. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, and then some, you know, a few dropped off. And, you know, that's okay too. You know, I mean, I'm still in contact with them, but, you know, it's just business. So yep. It's nothing personal.
Cool. So where'd you go from there? So you kind of phased in your existing clients. I guess we're kind of getting into like quarter two of 2015 or so. What were your next steps?
My next steps were really to try to get new clients on board. Really the first, you know, several months of the year was really ironing out the processes, making sure that I was delivering on what I was saying I was delivering on, making sure the communication channels were working the way that they should be. And then it was more of a matter of really just, you know, trying to bring on new clients and really finding that niche client that I work well with. Kind of the clients that I work with are established businesses that have a site, but the site is doing what they kind of need, you know, but it's not really matching their brick and mortar sort of business. They need tailored development on their site, or they need, you know, more than out of the box kind of plug-in feature sets. You know, they need it really tailored to their business, but they don't have the resources to bring on an in-house developer.
Got it. So how did you come to that? Like, how did you figure out who your most ideal client is? Was it based on just previous experience of like looking at your current client list and saying, all right, these five are great and these other five are not so great and I kind of want to focus on them? Or like, how did you kind of go through that process?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, initially, you know, my ideal clients in the past had been the design and marketing firms. And that was really because I had worked in that space full time. So I knew how those companies worked. And by doing hourly and that kind of thing, that worked well. I didn't have to go out and do the sales part of it. They were just kind of giving me the work. Mm-hmm. When I started productizing my services over the, I guess, even a year and a half or 2 years back, before this current, you know, this founded, you know, service, mm-hmm. I started seeing that I was more tailored towards being that partner, being that development partner that these small businesses needed, because I was able to kind of listen to what they needed and be able to, quote unquote, speak the king's English. And developers don't do that very well.
Yeah.
Be able to communicate like, okay, you want an e-commerce store, you know, and then they want all these bells and whistles, and I just ask why don't you really just want somebody to click that buy now button? You know, and kind of bring them back down to earth rather than talk to them technical and say, oh, well, that's going to take jQuery and all these libraries and all this other stuff. They just start getting glassy-eyed. So yeah. That's kind of really how I you know, started finding that, okay, this is where I really fall in very well, because my existing clients were telling me that, you know,
yeah,
that I can do that. So
yeah, and it sounds like, you know, you started to identify that, hey, you know, when I work with these businesses, these small business owners who don't have the technical know-how, but they need e-commerce, or they need some sort of development, you know, solution, you kind of identified that in that situation, you're actually solving a real problem, like a real business problem for these clients. Whereas if you look at the agencies, I just know this from my background of doing similar kind of work a few years back. Agencies, there's nothing wrong with it really, but agencies working with freelancers, it's more about a commodity, you know, developer in a chair working these number of hours and that's what they need. It's not like, you know, bringing you in to, and they have some burning problem that you can solve. So I think it's very smart to focus on the small business owners, because you're identifying a problem that you can solve and you're like the go-to solution for that, which makes it much easier for them to recommend you to other businesses, and then easier for you to market and get in front of them. So very cool.
Yeah. And the other thing too, is that I'm also very analytic. I don't necessarily say that we need to do it this way, and it's because just because I want to do it that way. Mm-hmm. There's always some sort of data back, reason for why, I want to implement something on a customer's site, because I know for a fact, either because I've done it in the past or because, the research says that if you do it this way, this is going to work for you.
Got it. Cool.
And I try to explain that, because the thing is, I'm in this space. This is what I live and breathe. I do every day, that kind of stuff. So I'm always reading articles and things like that. Somebody that sells custom guitars, they don't know what, converts on email newsletters or anything, sure. or anything like that. Or they don't know that color plays, into how you, whether somebody buys your product or not.
Yeah.
So they don't know those things. So I try to convey these data-backed, and well-researched, effects to make sure that they can accomplish those goals.
Yeah, very cool. And it positions you as an authority, as an expert, which of course you genuinely are. You know this stuff inside and out, and it just adds even more credibility and kind of fuel to the whole business. Very cool. So I mean, like, what else? Now, as we get throughout the year, we're getting closer to present day. I mean, what else has changed, and maybe where are things changing as we go forward and into the next year?
Yeah. So the one thing that I had set out on and last January was to 10x my monthly revenue, and I'm not one of those types that puts out the numbers or anything like that. But what was funny was that from the previous year, I had to 10x that number. So when I said that to my wife, she looked at me like with this like blink, blink, like, really? How are you going to do that? That sounds like an awful lot. So I was like, I don't know, but that's if
my wife says the same things to me, like, all right, if you say so.
Yeah. And, I said, if I say I'm going to double it, that's kind of too low. If I say that I'm going to 10x it, for me, that's like shooting for the sky, and I'm going to try everything to get to that number. Mm-hmm. Well, I actually wound up reaching that goal in June, so it was half a year in.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say only 6 months in.
Right. So I knew at that point, I said to myself in January, if I get the 10x number, then I know that this model works, and I want to pursue this even further.
Wait, so let me just clarify this. So you actually 10x'd your, was it 10x the number of clients or 10x the revenue within 6 months?
Revenue.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's impressive.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, for me, a lot of people, they want to 10x the profit and that kind of stuff. And I understand why, but I was really just wanting to make sure that what I was doing was valid. And by being able to bring in the money, I know that this is valid, a valid service that people want. And that's really what it's a matter of selling, right? You want to be able to sell, because I've had failed projects. I did an ebook that I wrote on my blog about, why I shut it down. So I've done failed products before, but I really wanted to make sure that what I'm providing to people is something that's viable, something that people want to buy.
Yeah. I mean, talk about people want to buy, because what's really interesting about that is, such a drastic increase in revenue in such a short period of time, but it's still just you. Like, it's not like that increase in revenue required you to bring, drastically grow your team or, costs going up. I mean, you're still basically spending the same number of hours, and even being more efficient with how you spend your hours. So I think I think that goes to show A, how efficient your time has been, but B, probably more so on this point, is that businesses prefer, not necessarily prefer to pay more, but they prefer to have that predictable model of, I know that that if I pay, Jason's company X number of dollars every month, I get exactly what I need to have my problem solved.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And that's really what it came down to, was that, like I said, I have calls every week, and I even set up quarterly calls with clients that I just call take your temperature kind of calls, just make sure how we're doing. You know, is there anything we can do, you know, better between us, you know, communication wise or anything like that? And that's the most response back, is that we're just glad that we know that we have you. We don't have to go chase people down. We don't have to, you know, we know that we have a call every week. So, you know, if I think of something on Tuesday, I know we're having that call on Friday. I could just wait till Friday, you know, those kind of things. And that's what people, you know, they don't necessarily have, you know, 150 grand to go out and hire a developer, but they have real business needs that have to get addressed in order for them to accomplish their goals. So, falling in that little space there, you know, provides that for them.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I mean, where are we going from here as we head into the new year? I guess I'm kind of curious about, like, have you hit any sort of limit or have you ever, like, cut off the number of clients that you're going to take on?
Yeah, I do cut off the number of clients, because, like I said, it's only me, and I want to make sure that I provide the value to those clients. So it kind of works, you know, two ways, really. It's good because it kind of gives that, exclusivity kind of mentality. You know, people, you know, I do have a queue of people that, you know, are waiting, you know, for the door to open or that kind of thing. But the other thing, too, is because it's just me, how much can I take on in any given day? So you have to know your limits in that. And sometimes I get buried. You know, there are times where, like, you know, my clients don't talk to each other. They don't know, you know, what their deadline, you know, other deadlines are. So, you know, that for me is that I would like to address, you know.
How do you expect to address that? I it could be taking on, like, teammates, like another developer or something, and also I'm curious, like, have you increased rates at all, or do you plan to increase rates?
So one of the things that I'm thinking of is I've kind of been trying to figure out if I can bring on another developer to really do what I do, you know, and be able to talk to them, talk to the clients and that kind of thing, and really train them to do those sort of things. Mm-hmm. And basically be the business of the service that I'm providing. I'd much rather not be a go-between, you know, where I kind of assign tasks to a developer and, you know, go back and forth. That's one aspect. The other aspect is that I'm really, this year, there's two real big goals that I want to do. One is content marketing, and the other goal is really to kind of analyze some of the tools that I'm using and the tools that are out there to provide more value to the client so that I can increase the pricing. I do think at if you asked this question before, maybe about 6 to 8 months ago, I would have said I probably hit a ceiling for that kind of niche client. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking that I'm probably not at that ceiling yet, so raising the rates might be in the cards, but it's not something that I'm looking to do, like, immediately.
Cool.
I would really want to make sure that, you know, I can put down a real good sales funnel before I can raise those rates, so that I don't necessarily have to be that sales engineer all the time.
Yeah.
So.
Very cool. Well, it's exciting stuff. I mean, I'm definitely looking forward to staying in touch and seeing how things progress over the next year. I mean, you've had a tremendous first. It's not your first year in business, obviously, but it's your first year with this productized model, and I think it's just, you know, really really exciting to see all the progress. So so Jason, thanks for taking the time, and for folks who want to check out your stuff, definitely go over to rezz.com, rezzz.com. That's three Z's. And where else can people kind of connect with you?
Twitter is probably the best, and that's Rezz with three Z's, also on Twitter.
Nice. Got the domain, got the Twitter ID. That's awesome.
Yep.
Cool. Well, thanks again.
All right. Thanks again, Brian.
Thanks for tuning in today. Get all the show notes for this entire season at productizepodcast.com. And to get my free Productize Crash Course, where I share my best strategies for launching and sustaining your productized service business, head over to productizecourse.com. All right, time to get back to working on the business.